Was that Tom?
Hi, Tim.
So at the moment, what we're doing is we're using my laptop for Zoom. I don't know how to connect to you. I don't know how to share it with you.
Teenagers to come and say, okay, your job is to shovel the driveway for me.
Yeah. Remember, it's like, Dana's the one that got stuck. All right. I don't know how to make that work, but it's easier. We'll go with what we got.
Okay.
Get started. I go to my computer. And on my computer, I go to check out the drudge report. And on the drudge report, I see Drudge's big red flashing light. Have all of you seen his red flashing light? And there's an announcement. Drudge has the big red headlines. Abomination seen in workplace.
Is this true?
It's going to be someday.
Okay.
Abomination seen in holy place. So I decided I should go turn on my TV. I turn on my TV and look at the news channel. And what do I see? I see TV reports out of Israel. The road is full of people, full of cars. I see the airport, about everybody coming into the airport trying to get fly out of the country. They got pictures at the port where heaps of cargo ships are being loaded with passengers. The abomination's been seen in the holy place. There's been a whole bunch of talking heads on TV that are telling me what it is. One pastor is being quoted as saying, you know, all these people in Israel are just kind of crazy because the abomination happened a couple thousand years ago. And that was when some Greek guy threw a pig on the altar, and all these people in Israel are just superstitious people. Totally unnecessary. There was another talking head, and this talking head said that, well, you know, the Jews are no longer God's chosen people. The Christians are God's chosen people, and these Jews are kind of crazy. And then there was an Adventist pastor on TV that pulled down one of those. And this Adventist preacher, you know, on the TV, he said, you know, all these people, the military armies that are near Jerusalem, those are just a sign of things that are to come. They're not the real abomination. The real abomination happened in AD 66. There will be another. That one won't happen quite yet. It hasn't happened. On Matthew chapter 24, verse 15, I suspect what we need to do is unplug the meat here. Online people.
I think it might have. We'll get them back.
Oh, we're getting feedback, so I didn't hold the system bracket.
It's true. You had to zoom into that, right?
I did have to zoom.
Yeah. Let's try it.
Back to life.
So if we take a look at Matthew 24, verse 15, so we read that for us.
The day is coming to you a saying of God and the story of God. That's a separation.
Turn your volume down on that.
Just to back up and see what it is. What happened is with the water. Jesus is inside of the water. And Jesus is taking a look around and saying, see all this? It's all going to be destroyed. There's not going to be a single stone standing on another. Bible says, this thing has been under construction for 46 years. Can't just be all knocked over. Says there won't be one stone left standing on another. What is he talking about? Is it something we need to worry about? Or is it just a history book?
Where are the other places that it talks about?
It talks about it in Luke chapter 13. Excuse me, Mark chapter 13. It talks about it in Luke chapter 21. In Luke, we're told when you see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, you're supposed to do. Whereas in Matthew, it simply says, will we see standing in the Holy Spirit? Pray to do the book around. First of all, I'm going to find one.
Another, five brothers got together in the Baptists, and they decided that they would be. So they had a little rebellion, killed a bunch of them. And in the process, they were shut out. And they were able to have an independent Jewish state for 150 years. Until a couple of the descendants got the Bible. And they couldn't agree on the news. So they decided to ask the Romans to arbitrate between them. So which one of them should be controlled? You or me? And it's three. Yeah, I agree to let you choose, but since you chose the end, we're this one. And we're going to have a little bit. But the Roman said, fine, we'll take over. So the Roman moved in. The Romans then said, okay, we're going to make a kind of control of the Syrian general. So,
Isaiah chapter 40, verse 9, they read about the coming of the Messiah. And John, if I can have
you. I'm not hearing anything. This is Barbara.
Yeah, we aren't either. I'm messaging Ron.
Oh, okay. Trying to figure out what's going on. My husband's saying, how come you have Hope Channel TV on? And I said, well, because I'm not hearing anything. And Isaiah is a good study.
It is.
Okay, I thought there was something wrong with my thing, my speaker. Whatever.
No, it's not you.
Okay.
I think they're having troubles there in the chapel.
Oh. Because if I went with my inclination, I'd probably still be in bed today. Instead, I'm looking at clumps of snow that are gradually probably going to leave my lawn. So we're not snowed in. Yay.
Good. I'm not sure whether they're able to hear us in the chapel or not, even though we can't hear them, so I'm going to be quiet for a second.
Okay, I'll stop whispering.
temple steps, placing peace and worshiping. The closest reference would be even today, Christians get together and do this little sunrise services on one day a year. Maybe, yeah. And yet, at the same time, Easter happens to be a biblical festival, so it can't be wrong. So, what is, go ahead, Dave. So, where are you reading this for?
I have to come for it. I just remember my study.
I think
it's Ezekiel 8.
Is it Ezekiel 8? By the way, don't worry, I'm going to tie this all to the festival. That's right. It all ties to the festival. Okay, so.
And
you want me to unmute this, or are you using yours? I'll just be quiet. So what is the abomination in regards to us? What is it that we care about? Jesus says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, or as Luke puts it, as you see the army surrounding Jerusalem, or as you take a look at Mark, when you see the abomination standing where it should not be standing, what is the abomination? Now, I think we should all worry about somebody throwing sticks and altars. That's what we should worry about, right?
Is it a metaphorical pig?
Okay, we got a metaphorical pig. So imitation bacon. It's going to be an abomination, isn't it?
We got bacon, sausage,
bacon. So any of us who happen to eat this big wham or imitation bacon bits, those kinds of things, that is the abomination. Well, true pork lovers would definitely think that this is an abomination.
Depends on how you get it perspective at some time, isn't it?
Perhaps so. Do I need to pay attention to these verses, or should I go?
Well, most of the Bible speaks in parables.
Okay. So what's the parable where I'm supposed to get from this? What's the metaphor?
That comes across the culture.
Okay. Let's go back and put ourselves in the culture. The culture being, which one do you want to use? The one in which Daniel was writing? Because Daniel happened to live long before Jesus.
He
was a Jew, yes. And he happened to be the most esteemed Jew by God. He happened to be God's chosen. He also happened to be a eunuch. He also happened to be a prisoner of war. He also happened to be the prime minister over a third of the Persian Empire. We're just saying. And he might have had a word said there. And he must have smelled bad to the lions. So, what was the setting for Daniel? Gabriel, the angel Gabriel, is sent specifically to Daniel to explain the visions he's having. And at the end of the vision, Daniel says, I still don't get it. So, Gabriel sent a second time. Make this man understand. At the end of the second one, he says, I still don't get it. You failed, Gabriel. You are a failure, Gabriel. You didn't succeed. I don't get it. I'm going to be sick. So what is the setting? Now, specifically in the vision, Gabriel says, this vision I'm giving you is not for you. This vision is not for the people next to you. In fact, don't tell anybody. That's what the vision Gabriel said. Gabriel says instead, this vision is for the end. So, which end is he talking about? Many a Christian will tell you that the end is referring to AD 70 when Titus destroys the temple, and that that was the end of the Jew and the beginning of the Christian. And that's when that passage applies, and we don't need to worry about it. Fair? Dana says now, we should also think about it. Because it might have some application to us as well. True. Does anybody agree with Dana?
But I also understand that degrees come with
it. It is dangerous to agree.
But I agree that it's the fact that, you know, it's everything in the Bible, if it's in the Bible, it's meant for us to take it and apply it to our lives at the time of our living. Because we're not living then, we're not going to be living anytime soon. Later on, that's our end. So anything that's in the Bible, of course, I don't disagree. I think it's true, but I still think we'll change it. because I think people who sought it out weren't diligent about it. And some thought of it as butchery or crap, pure spirit, and speaking of things that happen, like coming or having torture the body to see if there was demons in it. Because before that, you know, Jesus was going around telling people he was demons. And so, if you were showing something that's different or spoke of something that was God, you would consider it beautiful.
So, what's the abomination?
The abomination.
What's the abomination of desolation spoken of by the Daniel prophets applicable to Robert?
It happens week by week, Ezekiel described it as hearing the word of God and not obeying.
Well, that's been happening for a long time. So what makes this particular abomination separate and distinct that I'm supposed to, we're supposed to call all the Jews a penny? What is different? Dana.
Idolatry.
Idolatry has been happening for millennia. What's going to be special about this idolatry? It has to do with idolatry. So idolatry has to do with worship. Worship has to do with who we should worship. Well, there's a lot of people who worship somebody other than God and have been worshiping someone other than God for a very long time. Who knows what the little high-pitched sound is? Oh, most people.
But I have a question. If the abomination of desolation, so what's the desolation part?
What's the desolation part? Well, obviously, to be desolate means to make empty. The abomination causes destruction, emptiness, chaos, nothing. So what is the abomination? What is the word abomination mean?
You want the Webster, the Oxford, there's a couple of different definitions.
All right. Abomination, as we say, is the deal with idolatry. Abomination means something incredibly bad. It means something that is wrong.
Some say horrifically bad.
Right. So what does it mean in this context? How in the world are we supposed to, I mean, if we read through Matthew, Jesus says, when you see it, drop everything and run.
What if we've already saw it? We weren't paying attention. That's the same reason why people
in the Old Testament
why not
paying attention to the Spirit. We have a couple people in this room who've been lifelong Adventists. What was the Adventist church?
Sound of law.
Anybody hear what Stephanie said? Stephanie said it is a Sunday law. Is what Adventists teach. She's correct. That is what Adventists teach.
I think it's more. I think it's universal.
Universal law. Well, it's a national Sunday law.
Which is the local Sunday law.
So the question then becomes, how do Adventists get this crazy notion? How can you demonstrate that idea from the Bible?
It says it'll change times and laws.
So Stephanie says that there's a verse in the Bible that says somebody will change times and laws, and that's what the abomination is.
It's already happened.
Is she right?
I think she's right that it possibly never happened. We have many things going on in the world today.
So, do I need to worry about doing this? Because it's going to be something that's been happening. What's different and unique about this? Sunday laws have been in place for a long time. There have been people persecuted and killed for a long time. So the abomination is just an ongoing thing, it's a unique thing for each person.
Well, in the dictionary, abomination is described as a thing that causes disgust or hate. Similes are atrocity, disgrace, horror, detestation, loathing.
So the terrible, terrible, detestable thing that happens.
It could be considered a dangerous person.
All right, Patricia.
Desire on the part of Catholics
a universal Sunday law.
All right. So Patricia's statement and argument is the Sunday law has not been universal, and therefore that's not the abomination. So
how about the Antichrist?
Who is the Antichrist?
Would he be connected?
All right. So if you take a look at the Bible, and Jesus said, go look in Daniel. In Daniel, if you look at Daniel, and you look up the references to the abomination. There happens to be a reference to it in Daniel chapter 8. There happens to be a reference to it in Daniel chapter 9, another one in Daniel chapter 11, and another one in Daniel chapter 12. Daniel talks about it four different times. If you use the same language it's associated with it, you'll discover it's repeated throughout much of the Bible. Tracy?
So this question you asked with the abomination of creation. I think the issue with the evidence is that when we state that, you know, how we get to the point to say this is some wrong, it's not, I think it's correct. He goes into further of that, right? Particularly further saying the issue becomes each person has to ask a question for themselves. As I see scripture, God calls me to the Sabbath, I call it Sunday. Do I do what I think the world's not going to do what I do with God's not. And so that there's that internal struggle there. And I think that's your real, I hate to like it, but that's the point. Everyone's problem. But how the problem is desolation in your own temple. That you deal with the whole. That is different from the question that makes the same.
So I'm going to be very, very. I'm going to ask another question. Which Sabbath is it being referring to when in Daniel 7:25 it says this bad guy will think to change time and law? We say it's referring to the Sabbath. Why do we say that? Why do we say it's not referring to the festivals? Is it wrong to think that when he says he thinks to change times and laws, maybe what he's referring to is changing the Sabbath and also the festivals?
But when there would be an abomination of possession, one would refer to Daniel and the temple then is Jesus dying and then the future?
And we're talking about the future. We've talked about the time of Jesus, and now we're talking about the now. So, yes. We're talking about the now time. And the question becomes, what is it? So, if you go through Daniel and you just look at those verses, it doesn't tell you what the situation is. It doesn't tell you what it is. It doesn't tell you a whole lot. All of you, in order to understand it, you have to read the entire book of Daniel to get the flavor of it. And as you read through the whole book of Daniel, basically what it does is not as long as it looks. There is going to be a little horn and or a king of the north, that he uses those two words synonymously. And the little horn and the king of the north, and all those little horn, is this blasphemous power that challenges God. And this blasphemous power reaches up, blasphemes God, he reaches all the way into heaven and attacks the angels, and it takes a third of them with him. And this blasphemous little horn destroys God's people. And he controls God's people for a period of time.
And you think that states that which law is it?
So let's say,
the multitude of sins that occur or issues within the have a system that changes the climate is vast. So
So let's take a look at all the times that have been established by God and changed by someone. Number one, what time of day is the day start? According to God. Sundown. Sundown is the beginning of the day. According to our modern world, what time does the day start? Midnight. That's change number one. Change number two. When does the new year begin, according to God?
March 8th.
And what starts it? So what starts the new year, according to God, is on a new moon when the barley was ripe. Mm-hmm. When do we start a new year?
January 1st.
We have a whole bunch of festivals that are related to time. They are specifically tied to time. We don't observe those anymore. We ignore them. Those are another aspect of time that has changed. As we keep going through that, we discover that there are a lot of things which we don't do anymore, which God says, this is what I'm asking those crazy Jews to do. And we decide they don't apply to us. We use Daniel 7:25 to say, this little horn will change times and laws. But we choose one of the times that we think is changing and ignore the other times that he's changing. He's changing a lot of different times. As you go through and you study all these festivals, we discover there's a whole lot of things which we simply don't do anymore. Then we decide we don't need to do them because we don't apply to us. We base the idea as Adventists that the abomination of desolation is the Sunday law. And we get that idea based on one verse, which is Daniel 7:25, which says, he shall think to change times and laws, and the he that we're referring to is this little horn. And this little horn happens to be the blasphemous power that challenges God. We try to tie it directly to the Catholic Church and to the Pope. To be honest with you, I think it's far larger than the Pope. Mm-hmm. I think it's Satan himself. I think when Satan himself does something, and I think the Bible tells us what that something is, that we join him in the rebellion, and we do the detestable thing to God. And I think the Bible tells us what we will do here, but I think it tells us the day. And we don't have
time. Come on, Steve. We want to know the day.
I just have a curiosity. The Chinese celebrate New Year's differently than we do. Do the Orthodox Jews celebrate their New Year according to the barley and the
So what the Orthodox Jews do is this. Prior to the destruction of the Temple of Jerusalem, yes, they did have their new year based on the barley and the wheat. Then after the temple was destroyed and all the Jews had been kicked out of the territory, in about the year 300 AD, a high priest named Eliel came along and said, we don't have access to Jews, and we can't use the barley. So I'm going to use a mathematical model that I have created to approximate when that should be. And we will use my mathematical model. So Hebrew calendar you see today was made by a priest named Halil about the year 300. It is very, very close to the same thing as if you observe the barley. But it can vary by up to 30 days. And it can vary up to a day or two as well. It no longer uses the new moon, it instead uses mathematical calculation. but it attempts to approximate the moon without looking at it.
So what about a Reformed Jew?
What about a Reformed Jew? Mm-hmm. They will also use the same thing. The Jews themselves still keep the festivals, including the Reformed Jews. They honor the festivals. The cedar is still an incredibly important part of their life. And yes, Judaism, in spite of its many, many, many problems, has faithfully kept the seventh day since Egypt. And the Jewish people have managed to keep the festival, not faithfully every year, for a long period of time, which they didn't, and for which they were condemned and sent into captivity. And they continue to do it today. And keep in mind that most people consider there to be the two largest events in Jewish history. Number one was the Exodus. The second most important event in Jewish history was in 1948, the founding of Israel, which resulted, came about because of terrorism, when the Jews blew up a British hotel. They bombed it, killed a bunch of British people. And with that, the Brits pulled out of Israel and said, we give up. And the United Nations says, fine, we're going to recognize Israel. By the way, that's another fascinating story, is learning how Israel came into existence in 1948. By the way, just as a real quick brief hint of it, what happened is, we know, the Jews were massacred and slaughtered by Hitler. But there were still a bunch of them which managed to escape him. And so once the camps were closed down, they decided a bunch of Jews were headed to Israel. Didn't exist right then, but we're headed to that region, that part of the world. And they would get there by hook or by crook. They'd take a little turn road, they'd take a plane, whatever, but they'd get there. There was a group of people which were organizing this migration. And one of these people happened to go and buy a ship. It happened to be a derelict old ship, which happened to be able to hold 5,000 people. And this ship of 5,000 people was based, they loaded the ship with Jews in the south of France. They named the ship the Exodus. And the name of the ship is the Exodus. And so this ship is being monitored by the British, because the British do not want it to land in Judea, because they know it's going to just, it causes problems. So the Jews said, we're loading, we're letting you know we're going. And the Brits sent out a bunch of destroyers. And their purpose was to intercept all ships going to Judea and turn them around. And if they caught one of those boats, they would put them all on Cyprus. This was the biggest boat. And this was the one of which the Jews weren't trying to evade the Brits. They were going to go straight through. Yeah, we see your destroyer, good luck in Cyprus. And so what they did was they took their boat and they took all of the deck and they put all the steam pipes off the engine so they could blow them overboard. So when the Brits tried to board them, they could steam them with oil and gas. They could put a whole bunch of barbed wire across the deck. So when they climb up over the side of the deck, they run into all the barbed wire. They have a whole bunch of handmade weapons that have crafted out of it with their intent of basically beating the British back off their boat. The Brits allowed the boat to get within about 50 miles of Israel, Judea, and Palestine, as it's called all the time. And the Brits decide we're going to have to board this boat because we're not going to allow it to land. So some or set of British guys are sent to board the boat. There's a few people who died. The Jews who were running the boat, a couple of them in the cabin that were in the helm, were killed because the Brits shot them or clubbed them to death. They did commandeer the boat and they turned the boat around, but instead of dumping them in Cyprus as they normally would, they turned the boat around and sent it all the way back to France. Oh. Now, actually, what they did is they took all the people off the boat and they put them on three different boats. Those three different boats then went all the way back to France. When they get to the French port, the French say, you know, we're not going to let anybody off the boat unless they voluntarily come off the boat. And the Jews said, well, we're not volunteering. Brazil, right. Okay, so what are we going to do? Fine. What we'll do is we're going to take them back to Germany. And we're going to forcibly disembark the people in Germany. And we're going to put them back in some camps in Germany. Run by Germans. So the passenger list that came from the Exodus boat ended up back on two boats. They ended back up in concentration camps in Germany that were continued to exist not as concentration camps, but as holding camps for these 5,000 people, of which a third of them were kids, a third of them were women, and a third of them were men. Many of the women and the children managed to escape with assistance from friendly people in the area, and they probably went to Palestine. The men, however, were held a little more securely. Of course, this is a massive propaganda problem for the British. Because number one, it's the Exodus boat. Number two, we're putting them back in Germany in a camp where they've all just been recently exterminated. And
what?
We happen to be using a bunch of Germans.
Nope.
The public relations disaster for Britain. They knew that was the way to happen, and they did it anyway. Then the Jews blew up the hotel. And when they blew up the hotel, the Brits says, fine, we quit. We're going home. You guys sort it out yourself. And when they did that, they released all the guys from the concentration camp in Germany. They all probably went to Palestine. So they all made it just two or three years later. And then millions of Jews managed to make it to Israel. And in 1948, they were recognized as a nation. And it's considered the second most important event in Jewish history. And it continues to be an incredible miracle, particularly what's going on. So the history is fascinating. Jews are still God's chosen people to find. What Romans 3 says. They're still his people. And we get to be grafted into that if we want to. When we graft into it, the question is what are we grafting into? Are we just grafting into the rewards only, or are we grafting into the culture? Anyway, I'm going to pass it. There's a lot more to it, and I think we can study what the abomination is, and we can study also what the. When it happened.